Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Rota Report podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. And you join us finally after Sunderland managed to pick up 3 points after a little spell of defeats in League One. Thankfully we managed to get the job done against Ipswich 2-0 at Stadium of Light, and joining us to discuss that game is Phil West, who was also there. How are you doing, mate?
I was indeed, Gav. Yeah, not too bad. Finally, we got the 3 points on the board. It was great to be back at the stadium as well, so all good.
Yeah, and also joined by Martin, who wasn't there because it would take a long time. How are you doing, Martin?
A 16,000-kilometre each way trip is probably a little bit too much, especially when you have to apply to even bloody leave the country at the moment. But no, I am excellent. Thank you very much. Yes, it's amazing what 3 points does.
Well, was it a performance that was worthy of such a long journey, would you say, or not?
It was a result that was probably worthy of it, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't great, Phil, but we got the job done. I think the scoreline, as Paul Cook said after the game, was probably a little bit flattering for Sunderland, but I think ultimately we did work hard. We got the job done. Like I say, in the end, I wouldn't say our quality showed, because it definitely didn't. I mean, it was a couple of errors, one by a referee, one by a goalkeeper, that led to the goals, but you know, I think we worked hard enough for the win, didn't we?
Absolutely. I think it was a victory that was built more on kind of those traditional qualities, you know, graft, endeavour, desire. As you said, we didn't really show much quality in terms of our, you know, passing or incisive attacking play. I think we probably played about 20 minutes of really decent football in the whole match. But at the end of the day, you know, we had to grind that victory out. And I think it was a good... It just showed to me that these players, you know, they're still playing for Lee Johnson. He hasn't lost them, no matter what people might have suggested after recent games, and that they are still determined to get promoted with this football club. So, yeah, it wasn't the prettiest game I've seen, and I don't think it's the prettiest game we will see this season. But at the end of the day, coming out on the right side of the scoreboard was the most important thing, and in that respect, it was job done.
Yeah, Martin, just from your perspective then, how did you feel about the overall sort of way the game panned out? Lee Johnson talked after the game in the interviews I heard just about how the lads were a little bit nervous, I would say, sort of going into the game, obviously, because they've been in such bad form, which was to be expected. But in the end, like I say, got the job done right.
Well, we did. And, you know, we had the 3 league defeats, but we also had the two games at home in the cup, didn't we? In the FA Cup and the Papa John's Cup, which Lee Johnson would have been hoping that the squad got a confidence boost from those two games. But it was probably the reverse, wasn't it? So there was it would be no surprise that the lads were feeling a bit nervous going into the game yesterday. It's a big game. Big crowd there. And, you know, there's been so much talk, and the players are human. They're going to be reading Twitter. They're going to be reading things online. You know, they're all going to pick up on the fact that, you know, people are not necessarily happy about the current performances. But the game panned out in sort of a way I was expecting, in terms of, like, we gave Ipswich a lot of possession, didn't we? We let them have the ball, and the possession stats sort of show that. And in the first 30 minutes, I must admit, I was kind of fearing the worst, because they looked slick. They were knocking it around. They had some players, especially the two wide lads, who looked as if they could really cause us some danger. But once we switched formation from the 4-4-2 that we kind of started with, we grew into the game a little bit. And really, like, for all of the possession that Ipswich had, I think they had 4 shots on target in the whole game, and 3 of them were in the same move, weren't they? So, you know, it wasn't as if they battered us and we were lucky to come away with a win. It was a fairly even game, and, you know, we just conceded possession to them and hoped to get them on the counter.
Yeah, I was just looking at the stats before. I mean, we had 2 shots on target, and those were our 2 goals. The first shot on target we had in the game was the header from Luke 09. We'll run through some of the action then. The start of the game, pretty nervy, Phil, wasn't it? I think you could tell that Ipswich had identified that we might start on the back foot, and it might be a good idea to get right at us if they were going to get an early goal. But we did ride through it. I mean, I think their two wingers looked dangerous at the start of the game, but we quickly worked them out. Two good players, yeah. I think, but our full backs did quite well.
I think it was Aluko on the far side as I was sitting in the early knockings of the first half. Looked really, really good. He was getting in behind. He was really kind of driving forward. What struck me, particularly early doors, was just how we looked a little bit nervous on the ball. Whenever the defenders were getting on the ball, none of the midfielders were really kind of coming to try and receive the ball and make passes through the midfield. So that was obvious in the early knockings, but I think that was to be expected. You know, I think there was always going to be a little bit of nervousness there. But yeah, like as Martin said, I think Ipswich, especially in the early half of the early parts of the first half, looked quite positive. You could see that they were trying to take advantage of our fragile nerves. But as you said, Gav, we did ride that out, and I think we looked fairly resolute. I didn't think we were being ripped apart. I thought we were a little bit open at times, but there was nothing particularly hair and scaring. And I just felt that it panned out roughly as I thought it would. I thought Ipswich would come and put some pressure on us early. If we could navigate our way through that, then we would try and clamber back into the game. And I think that's exactly what happened. So, yeah, it was a positive start for them. But once we kind of settled in a little bit more, especially once we got the ball on the deck and started knocking it about with a bit of zip, we started to look much more comfortable, absolutely.
Yeah, there was a lot of 1-2s, Martin, between Ross Stewart and Broadhead. And one of them moves on the counter nearly resulted in a penalty, didn't it? The one where I think it was Janoi Donancien. I hope I've pronounced that right. He cut across Ross Stewart, and I think it was a little bit of a shoulder barge coming together, and the ref wasn't having it. I mean, we'll get onto the ref in a bit, but do you think that was a penalty or not? Because there was a lot of people who thought it was, a lot of people thought it wasn't.
I think if you've got a half-competent ref, if that's outside the box, it's a clear free kick, and you get it every day of the week. And I must admit, I thought it was a pen, and I think it would have been a soft pen, but like Stewart's checked back on
them. Well, given the one he gave at the end of the game, you know what I mean?
Well, given the one he did give later on, the one he didn't give a little bit after this one, he was all over the place, wasn't he? But the defender's got his arms out. Stewart's checked back, and if the defender's not trying to hold him back or stop him or get in his way, why has he got his arms out there? So like Stewart goes over easily, and that's probably why he didn't get it. But to my mind, Stewart's got no benefit in going down there unless he is fouled, because he's working his angle onto his right foot for a shot, isn't he? So it would have been the soft one, but I think that's a definite pen. I know we've had a chat about it, and you know, some of the lads think it's definitely not. I think it's one of those you might get 7 times out of 10.
Mm. And then not long after that, Phil, was probably I would say the most important moment of the game from Sunderland's perspective, when Thorben Hoffman made 3 saves off the belt. I know the last one was straight at him, but the first two for me were great saves, reaction saves. Yeah. And the game would have been a lot more, well, I don't think we would have won, personally, if we had conceded in that moment, because we just didn't have a feeling of a team who would get back into the game. So had we gone 1-0 down there, you know, could have been a very different scoreline. So you would have to say that the goalkeeper has probably contributed more than anybody else at that moment.
I would definitely agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that. And it's interesting about Thorben Hoffman because, you know, there was a lot, he was in for a lot of criticism during the hammerings off Rotherham and Sheffield Wednesday. And my take on Hoffman is that his fundamentals as a goalkeeper, his shot stop and his reflexes, his athleticism are all really, really good. Where he's not quite at it yet is communication with his defenders, which I think will come with time. So I don't think that's a particularly big worry. But you're absolutely right that the reflexes he showed for that, for the I'm going to call it a 2.5 save, because as you correctly said, the last one was kind of straight at him. But the first two were really, really good. You know, he parried them, and he was sharp and he was alert as well. So I think Hoffman had quite a good game yesterday. He wasn't being peppered from all angles by Ipswich. You know, it wasn't as if he was diving left, right, and centre, and he was having to fend off shots from all angles. He was ready when called upon, and I think that was the kind of game that he needed yesterday. I think there were, you know, he would have been a bit nervous at times as well, but I think when called upon, he was there in the right place. So that to me was a real confidence builder for Hoffman yesterday.
Yeah, especially given how many goals he's conceded recently. I think everybody needed the clean sheet, didn't they?
Yeah.
Then as the half advanced, Johnson, he shuffled it up a little bit. He moved people around. Broadhead went out on the wing. Embleton went into the 10 role. And I think that change in shape, like you touched on earlier, Martin, helped us. And probably the best moment of the half from an attacking perspective for us was when Luke 09 bombed down the left wing, put a great ball into a dangerous position. And Ross Stewart, you can see him. He's always going to connect with it. And he just fluffed it, didn't he? It was really unlucky. I think had he scored that, we'd have been buzzing because, I mean, the ball from 09 was fantastic, especially with his left foot, wasn't it, Martin? It was a nice move, considering there wasn't a great lot of quality from us in the first half.
It was a cracking move, and you know that is such a good chance. Like, brilliant work from 09 to get that cross in. Stewart's an inch away from wellying that in, like, isn't he? But like Phil said, made the point earlier, and completely agree. Like, in the opening stages, we were having to go along because we didn't have the spare man in midfield to drop back and pick the ball up. So we were going from back to front pretty quickly, and it didn't work. And as you say, Johnson changed it, and you know we pulled Embleton into the middle. Gooch swapped sides, didn't he? And Broadhead came back into the sort of wide midfield area, and we looked an awful lot better. The unfortunate thing is, if we do that, we're sacrificing Broadhead, because him and Ross Stewart were actually combining nicely up front. And I think Broadhead up front with Stewart is going to be pretty important over the next few weeks. So I was disappointed in that respect to see Broadhead come back, but actually worked really, really effectively, I think.
Yeah. Then after the break, Phil, Lee Johnson, we came back out pretty much the same. So did Ipswich, to be fair. I think there was very little quality in that first sort of 15 minutes of the second half from either team. It was poor. But you've got to credit Lee Johnson because he made some attacking changes, which I think changed the game. I mean, he brought on McGeady, Pritchard and Diaku at different stages. McGeady, I think, had a big impact in play as he played a couple of really good passes into dangerous positions. Pritchard, and we'll come on to this, Pritchard was the man who delivered the ball for the first goal. And I think Diaku, he probably made more of an impact in terms of stretching Ipswich when they were tired, like moving around the front line and just running at them and buying us time up the pitch and stuff. So you have to credit Lee Johnson, really, don't you? Because he took off Corey Evans, who, for me, that's the worst I've seen him play. But he took off a defensive midfield player for an attack midfield player to try and win the game. And ultimately, it paid off, didn't it?
Well, he's been criticised, hasn't he, for either botching the timing of his substitutions or, you know, getting the kind of feel of his substitutions wrong. And I remember when the team sheet came out yesterday, I remember thinking this is a bit of a gambler's choice, really, the formation and the team selection he'd gone with. But having McGeady on the bench, for example, is, I think, a really shrewd piece of management. Because as I said this weeks ago, if you're the opposition and you see a fresh Aidan McGeady warming up with 65 minutes on the clock, you're going to be aware that this is a man who's coming on who can provide something for his team.
Yeah.
And he did, he came on, he looked pin sharp, he looked really, really fresh, he looked really, really sprightly. I thought he got straight into the game and he got on the ball and right away, as McGeady always does. He's not going to hide, he's going to get on the ball and he's going to try and make things happen. And the same with Diaku. I thought Diaku looked quite good when he came on as well. And he's another player who has been criticised since he came because he's been very erratic with his form. But as you said, he came on, he stretched them, he was keen to get on the ball, he was making runs. But yeah, I think you do have to give Lee Johnson a lot of credit for the way he adjusted tactically yesterday because, you know, he's been accused of being a little bit flat-footed at times, waiting too long, etc., etc. But I thought he got it absolutely spot on yesterday. So yeah, I think you do have to give him enormous credit, without a doubt.
Yeah, anything to add there, Martin, in terms of how the subs impacted the game? Because like we say, I think everyone was expecting it to sort of peter out, maybe be 1-0 Ipswich, 0-0 final score. And he rolled the dice, didn't he? And it worked.
He did, and you wonder why he did that and whether he would have done that if we'd come into that game off three wins. No. Whether he was kind of thinking that.
No.
Well, he doesn't, does he? I think it's a simple... He needed that win yesterday for all manner of reasons, and whether it would have been critical for his long-term prospects at the club or what, we don't know. But he knew that we needed that win, and he stuck everything on red and span it, didn't he? And it came up. But like McGeady, as Phil said, like McGeady offers so much coming from the bench, and Diaku's best performances or his good performances have been from the bench. And I think we've got to be smart with McGeady. And you know, he's not the player he was 3 or 4 years ago, he's not the player he was 2 years ago potentially, although he has had a lot of injuries this season which have maybe held him back. But for us to have him on the bench to bring on with 30 minutes left, 20 minutes left, that is an ace card that nobody else in this league can compete with.
Oh,
I think we've got to use him more like that, especially when we're playing Saturday, Tuesday. He's, you know, we're actually wasting him if we start him every game.
No, I would agree. And when I listened to Lee Johnson talk to Nick Barnes after the game, he was mainly talking about the fullback problem that we've got. But then he said, well, then I looked at me wide options and I had like seven players to pick from, you know. And you've got when you've got that many players who can play across that forward line and wide positions, you've got to try and mix it up. Because like you've just said, we're playing three games a week. And at McGeady's age, he might see it different. I imagine he would be in the player he is. But I think it's impossible to expect that he's able to have an impact across three games a week. You've got to manage him better at his age. And I've said for me, I remember probably saying this when Jack Ross was manager, but I feel like in certain situations, the best use of Aidan McGeady is from the bench. Because,
absolutely,
like you just said, Phil, you bring him on with 25 minutes to go with fresh legs and he's motivated and he's the type of player who probably relishes running at tired defenders. He thinks, I'm going to have a right go at him. He's knackered. I'm going to make him even more tired, you know?
Oh, he'd have been watching that game unfolding from the bench yesterday and thinking to himself, right, you know, how can I make an impact here when I come on? He's a seasoned pro. He's been around the block. He knows his onions. He knows what to do. He comes on. He's not going to be afraid. You know, if his teammates are a little bit unsure as to what to do, McGeady's going to come on and he's going to say to them, look, lads, let's get this moving. You know, we can win this game. Let's just be proactive and let's be positive. So I think what you get with McGeady in terms of his on-the-ball ability is that, you know, that spark, that creative spark that he brings you, but also his professionalism as well. And he, you know, obviously we needed a reaction after that ridiculous red card he got at Rotherham. And I think his contribution yesterday was absolutely priceless for us. I really, really do.
Yeah. Then 5 minutes to go, we got the opening goal of the game. One thing that struck me was that because our corners had been so poor all day, because they had, I think Embleton had took the majority of them and they were crap. Most of them were just failing to beat the first man. Pritchard's ball sort of swings with pace right over the pack to Onai. It's a really good ball. I know that the goalkeeper, you might as well give him the assist really for the way he flew out and totally flapped at it and missed it. But I think that importantly, the cross has got to be good to even cause the goalkeeper problems. I don't know whether, because obviously you don't get a very good angle with one camera, but I don't know whether it swerved a little bit or what, and that maybe threw him. But regardless, the ball by Pritchard was really good. 09 gets on the end of it, as he often does, and bounces up into the net, 1-0. Happy with that, Martin? I think, considering, like I said, the corners had been so crap all day, it was nice to score from one.
It took us by surprise, because after the string of corners that we, as you say, had failed to beat the first man, I was surprised that it actually went up in the air, never mind went to the back post. But no, it was cracking balling, wasn't it? And, like, you know, that's a little glimpse of Pritchard's quality, and he hasn't shown much in his four or five months here, and we need him to start showing us a lot. But that ball from the corner was a beauty, and O'Nien didn't necessarily connect with the firmest of headers, did he? But the goalkeeper goalkeeper was put off by his own defenders, wasn't he? And O'Nien just managed to sneak in and knock it in.
Yeah.
To be honest, Gav, I was actually sitting. I'm sitting in the northwest corner of the stadium, and I was right behind Pritchard when he whipped that ball in. And I actually thought at first glance, he's actually overhit this cross. And I thought it was just going to end up floating out of play on the far side. And then when O'Nien connected with it, it seemed to take an age for the ball.
Did I? I was on the other side. I was in the southwest corner. And it was like a delayed reaction.
It was as if time stood still, you know. And I thought to myself, have they called for a foul on the goalkeeper? Is there an offside or something? And then I saw him sprinting away to the corner. I'm thinking, oh, the goal's been given. It was a bizarre goal to watch. And even on the replays, I don't know whether it came off his head, his thigh, or wherever, but they all count, don't they? So it was a crucial goal for us.
And then to wrap it up, we got a penalty. Again, the inconsistent referee, Martin, gives a... I mean, he's the only bloke in the stadium who thought that was a penalty. Not one of the players appealed for it. None of the Ipswich players sort of reacted. Nobody on the bench reacted, but the ref gave it. He gave it for a handball. I've slowed it down. It does hit Nciala's hand, and his hand is out. He sort of turns his body to try and block the shot, and his arm goes with it, and it hits his arm. But if that's a penalty, then how many of them would you get all in a season? But we're not going to win, Joey. I mean, it all counts. And Aidan McGeady, to be fair, absolutely slammed it into the top corner. Brilliant penalty. But presume you're along the same lines as me. That wasn't a penalty, was it?
I was shouting at the referee and I was calling him all sorts because I thought he'd given a goal kick. I saw him pointing and I thought, he's kidding. He really thought he'd given a goal kick. I didn't see a pen at all. But like, whether at half time somebody's had a word with him about the one where Stewart gets pulled down in the box. Mm-hmm. He got absolutely rugby tackled at the far post, and that is as clear a penalty as you'll ever see. And the linesman and the referee have missed it. So whether that's been on his mind or what, but you can't be given a handball for that. Like,
no. So yeah, 2-0 in the end. Good 3 points. I think, like we say, we can probably put the performance to one side, Phil. But man the match, was there anybody in particular who stood out to you? I know Andy on the site gave it to Luke O'Neill, mainly for one, getting the goal, two, filling in at left back and probably giving his best performance in a long time, despite the fact he's clearly struggling with his shoulder. I mean, it must have went out about 5 or 6 times during the game and he just popped it back in and carried on.
Yeah, he's running on empty at the moment. He's the tank is clearly, you know, very, very low with O'Neill at the moment. I would probably have given it to him. I thought he had a good game. I don't think any of our players were exceptional, but I thought he did a very good job. But yeah, I think that, you know, to be honest, I was in the kind of the camp of O'Neill needs to be taken out of the firing line a little bit here and maybe given the chance to get that shoulder sorted out, bit of recovery time, get himself fully fit again. But obviously Lee Johnson decided to stick with him yesterday again, showing a bit of loyalty.
I think the problem is, Phil, is that he can't afford to now. We've got no fullbacks, and
this is the problem.
Shoulder surgery takes 3 months,
yeah,
at least to recover. So I think we're probably looking at Luke O'Neill playing with a dislocated shoulder for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, Lee Johnson's been boxed into a corner, hasn't he, with the crisis, the injury crisis at fullback. Obviously, with Sirkin being out and Huggins not yet on the comeback trail. It's just one of those things, Gav, isn't it? You know, I think people, you know, a lot of people were saying that they're, you know, we're back to the kind of the no senior fullbacks on the books type of thing again last night. But, you know, we are just going to have to get through it as best we can. And injuries are going to strike us at some point this season. And I don't think we'll end up in a situation where we're kind of patching the defence together again as we did last season, you know, with basically played, you know, three players out of position almost. But yeah, I think 09 will do a job there. I know there's been a lot of debate about whether he's a fullback or whether he's a midfielder. Personally, give him a run at fullback. I think he'll do a good job. I don't think he'll let you down. But yeah, I think that this is where Lee Johnson really needs to rely on the adaptability of someone like 09. And he won't give up. You know, he's not gonna throw a sick note in there and cry off. He'll keep on going right until the very end. So I think that's admirable, to be honest with you, having a player who's prepared to put himself on the line like that for the good of the team.
Yeah, we'll quickly touch on the fullback thing then. So it came out after the game, Martin, that Dennis Sirkin's out till January, which means we now have no fullbacks until January. So there was talk of potentially looking at the free agent market, but I don't think there's anybody out there really, is there, who we could bring in and throw straight into the mixer? I mean, how long does it take to get a player up to speed, especially one who hasn't been playing or training? It's a funny one. So, you know, what would you do? Because he also talked about this is what I heard in the BBC Newcastle interview, but he talked about maybe switching to a 3-5-2, but he said, you know, it takes a bit of time to get used to how you press, because you press differently, and we need 3 or 4 weeks to work on that, like we don't have. So what does he do? Because, you know, we don't have many options, do we?
It's going to be a tough one for him to figure out. And even yesterday with 09 playing fullback, a lot of the time Callum Doyle was coming over to take throw-ins because 09 couldn't take a throw-in.
Yeah.
So it causes a bit of a problem, doesn't it? You know, you have potentially got Callum Doyle who could play fullback. I don't know if he ever has done before, but he's obviously naturally left-footed and he's composed on the ball and he brings the ball out. And I think he would do a good job there. Flanagan's played left-back a lot in his career. But, I suspect that what we'll see for the short term is 09 doing the job there and having to fill in there. And I think it was interesting, Gav, with the comments that Johnson made with, you know, potentially having to play a 3 at the back, because we actually have got a decent amount of centre halves, haven't we? And even 09, you know, 09 could feasibly play there on the left hand side of the defence or the right hand side of the defence, couldn't he? Where he's not in a position to take the throw ins and he could just defend, which I think he had a really good game yesterday. And it's just when he plays that reactive stuff rather than him having to be proactive, I think he's better. and he was getting tackles in. He was doing all that donkey work, and he really quite impressed at fullback. Mm. But it would be interesting if he did change it to five at the back, because we actually haven't got a naturally left-footed player to play wing back. Who you'd really trust as a... Like, I wouldn't fancy chucking Dejaku there. Gooch, if you play him there, he's on his wrong side. So you haven't even got a player who could sort of naturally fall in there, I don't think. But no. What it does do, it lets you have Broadhead up front with Stewart.
Yeah.
Because you can accommodate two up front. And I suspect that's as much of his thinking as solving the fullback problem is.
Well, he mentioned as well that he didn't just talk about the amount of centre-backs he's got. He talked about the amount of wingers he's got. So when you think about it, you could... I think if you were going to play a 3-5-2, just think out loud here, but Gooch would be a wing-back on one side, possibly the left. We've seen him play left wing-back quite a lot, actually, at Sunderland, if you think about it. You'd probably have Gooch one side, maybe Winchester the other, because I reckon he could play a wing-back. Then you've got enough centre-halves to cover for the three that you need in there. Midfield and striker were okay. So I can see it working, Phil, but like Lee Johnson said, how long is it going to take to sort of teach the lads the new way, the press?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at it from the other way, I know we mentioned this in our group chat after the game yesterday, if we were to stay with a four at the back, Tyrese Dice, now I know you've said he's not a full-back, and I think you said he's a winger by trade, but could he... Do you think he could maybe play a role? Because it's possible. I mean, it's my personal... I think he will switch to three centre halves. Personally, that's the indication I get. I think he will switch it up. But you know, I'm just wondering whether someone like Tyrese Dice could be worth a punt, maybe just to kind of see what he's got to offer in that position. It might not work, but you know, it might be something for Lee Johnson to consider, because as we've seen before, he's not afraid to promote from within if he thinks the players are good enough and they can do a job for the team. Mm. I think that he will switch to a wing back system. And I think how long will it take him to adapt? Well, that's the $64,000 question, isn't it? You know, we're getting into that part of the season now where the games are starting to be coming thick and fast as we head into the festive period, into the new year. There's going to be precious little time for the players to get a new kind of way of playing into their heads. So I think it's a bit of a balancing act from Johnson as well. But you know, I listened to his post-match interviews yesterday, and he sounded quite calm about it. He sounded quite matter of fact about what he's facing in terms of selection dilemmas and so on and so forth. So I'd like to think he's got a plan going forward. So I'm not desperately worried about it yet. It's not ideal, but I think we can cope with it.
It's only a season ago that we were actually playing that system, and there's still a number of those players who were there.
Exactly,
So it's not going to be something that's a completely new thing, a complete role reversal in terms of what they've been doing. And we're not coming off the back of a whole string of months of playing one formation where we've been excellent every week. We've chopped and changed. We saw yesterday change of formation. And even in the very early stages yesterday, 09 was tucked in a bit. And I didn't know whether Gooch was actually kind of playing a wing-back type of role. And it sorted itself out a little bit after that. But like 09 was sort of a little bit in from the normal fullback role. So it'll be interesting to see. But I think he probably will go with that three centre halves. And like Bailey Wright came in yesterday, and we haven't spoken about Bailey Wright, but I think he had a really solid game, and he added some stability there. And we've seen him play in that central role with three at the back, and that's where he's had his best games for us.
Yeah. No, I think I can see it now. Yeah, I haven't talked about it a little bit. I can see it, and it segues us nicely into the Shrewsbury game midweek. Do you see him maybe going with a three at the back as soon as that, Phil? Or do you think he might stick with something similar to what we've seen? I mean, I suppose in a way, actually, before I move on to it, that Ipswich and Shrewsbury are two very different prospects, aren't they?
Yes, so absolutely. Yes, they
he
are.
He might fancy playing a little bit more against Shrewsbury, even though it's away from home. You might fancy playing a little bit more football than we did at the weekend. So that'll affect his thinking, won't it?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we do go a little bit more expansive against Shrewsbury, because as you said, you know, that there's... I don't want to say there's less pressure on the game, because obviously what we're trying to do now is build a new winning run, as it were. And in theory, it they shouldn't pose as great a test to us as Ipswich did. But on the other hand, you can't take any team in this division lightly. We've had our pants pulled down on many occasions by the so-called lesser lights. So Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he does decide to kind of switch things up a little bit and go for that, go for this potential 3-5-2 system against Shrewsbury. I think what he learnt yesterday is that these players are willing and capable of filling in different roles and responding to that, to when he does move them around. So I think, you know, away from home, you know, could be a game that he feels is worth taking the gamble. But as Martin said, you know, would it be that much of a gamble? Because a lot of these players did play this system briefly. It didn't yield a great deal of success, but they have kind of, you know, dabbled with this system before. The only question is, would they be able to do it, you know, in this situation where there is more expectation on the game? So, yeah, I think I wouldn't be surprised if he did change it. On the other hand, he could well think to himself, well, what I went with on Saturday worked. Let's try it again, you know, and maybe save the experiment for a later date. So, yeah, I think it could be. I think it'll be an interesting selection for the next game, without a doubt.
Yeah, Shrewsbury lost at the weekend, had one of their better players, Elliot Bennett, sent off. But looking at the home form, the home form's pretty good. So we can't take them lightly, Martin, can we? It doesn't matter that they're just Shrewsbury. They are a decent team, clearly, at home. When you look at the form, I mean, just quickly browsing over things. Yeah, the last time they played at home, they beat Cambridge 4-1. The game before that, they beat another promotion contender, MK Dons, 1-0. They beat AFC Wimbledon 2-1. You know, they're not bad at home, and we've got to be wary about them. Especially, I also noticed they play 3-5-2, and we've struggled against teams more often than not this season when we cut against a side who play 3-5-2 with a big man up front. So, yeah, we've got to be wary, haven't we?
We have, and I think, you know, there's a danger that over the past few weeks, all of the focus has been on this Ipswich game. And it's, you know, quite rightly, it has been to a large extent, because it was imperative that we stopped that bad run of results. The fact that they play 3-5-2, I think we made a mistake when we went to Sheffield Wednesday after the Rotherham game by not matching them up. So I'd actually be really surprised if Johnson didn't match them up for formation. And, you know, even if we're looking at the game on Saturday and looking ahead to Tuesday, like Phil said, you know, Johnson might think, well, that worked, let's not change it. I actually don't think it did work. The formation that we set the match out with, that didn't work. He changed it after 25 minutes. If he picked that formation from the start, he probably doesn't pick those 11 players. He probably makes another one or two changes. No. So I'd be really surprised to see an unchanged side. And I think, you know, we've just got to go there. We've slipped up on these games so many times before where we go, right, we've got over the larger hurdle. We've got this nice, easy one now, and it comes back to bite us on the arse, doesn't it? So we've got to treat this, I'm sure we will do, but we've got to treat this as important as the game on Saturday, because if we can get the 3 points on Tuesday, we're back registering over 2 points per game, which is the benchmark for promotion. Yeah. And, you know, for all of the negative press and all of the talk over the past few weeks about Johnson should be sacked because we're doing this, that and the other. If we win on Tuesday night, we're getting over that 2 points per game, and we need to just do that over the course of 46 games. And, you know, if we can get 17 games on Tuesday with that ticking over, that's a good start to the season. I tell you what, if all of us had been offered that in August, you come in to the end of November, getting over 2 points per game, you're going, shit, yeah, I'll take that, because that'll set us up nicely for the rest of the season. So, big game, and let's hope we can get those 3 points.
Are you confident in the 3 points, Phil?
I am, and I think what Martin just touched on there is, you know, is very important, is that mentally we kind of don't switch off now. You know, I mean, you know, there were some people talking, you know, yesterday as if Ipswich were rolling into town and it was prime Barcelona. I actually didn't think there was a great gulf between the teams, actually, as it happens. But it's absolutely imperative now that we kind of reset, we refocus, we think to ourselves, right, one game, this has to be the start of a winning run. We can't let things slip again. We can't go win, loss or draw, and then win again. We've got to be kind of being consistent now. But when I think back to what happened when we restarted after the previous international break, after we got hammered off, I think it was Portsmouth, I think the first league game back was the Gillingham game, where we had to grind it out when that was a pretty tricky match. And then I think afterwards we went to Crewe and we really turned it on and we absolutely demolished them. So I think this, you know, if we're on our game on Tuesday, I think we could really play some good football and maybe the scoreline would be quite comprehensive in our favour. On the other hand, if we're a little bit slack and if we tell ourselves that, well, we've beat Ipswich, we'll just roll over Shrewsbury, that's where we're running the risk of coming unstuck. So mentally, we've got to be absolutely bang at it on Tuesday night, without a doubt.
Yeah, quietly confident is the overarching theme then. Yeah, well, cheers, lads. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back, I think, with a reaction pod after the Shrewsbury game. So be sure to join us. RokerReport.com, as always, will be updated each and every day through the week with fan-written articles, all that good stuff, historical stuff, if you're into that. It's the only place to head, so head to RokerReport.com. And yeah, we'll catch you next time. Cheers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.